So I call the House Health and Social Services Committee to order at 3:05 PM on Thursday, March 21st, 2024. And we're meeting today in Davis Room 106 of the Capitol Building. Please silence your cell phones out of courtesy to others who are attending. Committee members in attendance today are Representative McCormick, Representative Ruffridge, Representative Sumner, Representative Fields, Representative Mina, and myself, Chair Prox. We have a quorum to do business, and I want to introduce my aide, Riley Nye, who is usually over in the corner. But if you need to pass any correspondence to committee members, please pass it through Mr. Nye. And I want to thank our House Records Recorder, Cale Brown, and our teleconference moderator, Zach Lawhorn. And the items on our agenda today, we have Governor's appointee, David Paulson, State Medical Board. To the State Medical Board, we'll be taking public testimony on that. House Bill 309, Delegation of Routine Optometry Services, sponsored by Representative Sumner. We'll be taking invited and public testimony on that. House Bill 298, Alcohol Warning Signs on Licensed Premises, sponsored by Representative Gray. And we'll be taking public testimony on 289. And we have HCR 15, Mental Health Month, Tardive Disc Week by the Health and Social Services Committee. And then finally, we've got to take up a little detail on House Concurrent Resolution 9, I think, that we passed out mental health parity. There was just a fiscal note that we had to put with that. But so, and I guess while we're waiting for Mr. Paulson, we will go on to House Bill 309, Delegation of Routine Optometry Services, sponsored by Representative Ruffridge. And here to assist him is his staff, Bud Sexton. And we'll be taking invited testimony from Dr. Bradley Cross, optometrist of the Alaska Board of Optometry, and Dr. Damian Delser, optometrist, president-elect of the Alaska Optometric Association. Representative Ruffridge and Mr. Sexton, would you please join us at the witness table, put yourself on record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Prox, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Justin Ruffridge. I'm the representative from District 7, Kenai and Soldotna. Thank you very much for hearing House Bill 309 today. House Bill 309 deals with the practice of optometry. It's a relatively simple bill in nature. Current statute does not allow optometrists to delegate certain tasks that are routine to assistants inside of their practices. And so this bill seeks to address that issue, even though this has been a somewhat ongoing practice, but it's just been one that did not need to be addressed in statute and has only been very recent when this issue has become detected. So passage of HB 309 would remedy the exclusion of optometry assistants and would add delegation authority to optometrists who practice in the state and bring our statutes into compliance with the request of the Board of Optometrists. So I will stand ready to answer questions, but before we do that, I can certainly have Mr. Sexton introduce himself and do a sectional analysis or presentation, whatever the chair would would seek to have us do first.
Mr. Sexton?
For the record, Bud Sexton, staff to Representative Rufford. So very briefly, I'll go through a quick presentation and then happy to do the sectional if you desire. So House Bill 309 currently, optometric practices do not have current statute language to regulate the delegation of some of the technicians and assistants. And again, what we're really talking about is just some very basic routine tasks for anyone that has went to an eye examination. And when I get to that slide of routine tasks that we're talking about today, I think everyone will be very familiar with the tasks that we're describing in this. So again, we're just very basically looking at giving them something that other healthcare professionals in Alaska currently have. There's a list of those. Again, everyone familiar. When we're talking about delegation of authority, it's in statute already for others and is considered a bit of an oversight that optometrists were not included in some of the original bills that dealt with these subjects. As an example, some of the routine tasks, everyone, again, very familiar with just the real medical history, why somebody is there to see the optometrist, and the initial assessment as you look at the eye chart and kind of get a gauge of where the eye abilities are in relation to the eye chart. Routine things such as blood pressure, automated measurements of the eye, some of the digital imaging and tasks after the visit when you're talking about medications or refills. And also there is the field test, the peripheral vision testing, excuse me, that is interpreted later by the doctor. So the rationale and the reason for obviously delegation of tasks is to make as efficiently and effective as possible. We're talking about patient care. As we know, as individuals age and with baby boomers and other populations, the role of optometrists and their projected workload is only expected to grow in the future. And having the ability to delegate tasks certainly helps in keeping costs down, and you're able to see a greater number of individuals. So this bill doesn't have any impact on billing practices, not expected to increase cost to the patient population in any way. Basically, the goal is to make sure that patients do continue to receive appropriate care, effective care, and still be licensed, or excuse me, be supervised by a licensed optometric physician here in Alaska. There's great support for this bill. Some of our invited testifiers are in line with the optometric board and other positions. And again, the goal of this bill is just to bring optometrists in line with other healthcare professions in our statutes.
Okay, thank you. And did you want to read the sectional?
Certainly. Again, Bud Sexton, staff to Representative Rufford. So section one authorizes an optometrist under this chapter to that gives them the ability to delegate routine services. And requires that the agent not licensed under the chapter must meet standards established by the board. B, that talking about that delegation of duties does not pertain to any pain management and opioid use or addictions. So it does limit that. C, again, defines the phrase of routine services of optometry. And section two and three, basically relate to the above mentioned and previously mentioned items. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And did you want to take the
we can move invited, to invited testimony? If
invited testimony?
Yep. Okay. And both the doctors are in the middle of patient care as well, so I think it'd be good to see which of them are able to join, hopefully both of them.
We do have online, Mr. Chair, Representative Rufford for the record, Dr. Cross and Dr. Delzer, if they are not otherwise occupied.
I am not seeing Dr. Cross.
Dr. Cross is in the middle of a patient visit.
Oh, okay, that's why. So then also I have Dr. Delser. Are you able to join us?
Chair Prox, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and distinguished members of the committee. Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of HB 309. My name is Damian Delser. I'm a licensed optometrist from Fairbanks. I am the president-elect of the Alaska Optometric Association and had the privilege of serving as the immediate past chair of the Alaska Board of Examiners in Optometry. I am testifying in full support of HB 309, which is legislation requested by the Board of Examiners in Optometry due to a recent research opinion by the Department of Law addressing telehealth issues. The opinion was that the statute needed clarification regarding delegation of routine pretesting by optometric assistants. Optometry has utilized assistants as standard of care and industry standard practice for decades preceding my graduate professional education, and I personally have utilized assistants for the entirety of my over 30-year career in Alaska, as well as previously in the armed forces. Many states recognize this long-standing industry standard, and the use of assistants is a foregone conclusion in the delivery of eye care, not requiring any specific statute language. I hold licenses in North Dakota and Montana, and neither require such specific language and allow the board to regulate the delegation of routine tasks. It is an implied practice, just as we have done for many decades in Alaska. Like most professions, both within and outside of medical care, valuable team members allow for improved efficiencies and greater utilization of a professional's time and unique skills. Assistants improve access to nearly all types of medical care, and as was presented earlier, specific Alaska statutes address this across nearly all healthcare fields. The utilization of optometric assistants is universal throughout optometric practices in all states, helping to decrease costs and improve patient access. As previously stated, optometric assistants will often perform routine pretesting tasks under the supervision of the licensed doctor. And these tasks may include current visual acuity, much like one would have done at the Department of Motor Vehicles, measurement of glasses, documentation of past and current medical issues, current medications, allergies, photography, and non-invasive scans, as well as helping to assist patients to and from examination rooms. In some practices, they also serve as scribes, making notes as the doctor examines a patient. They often also will take phone messages regarding medication refills and convey messages to patients regarding recommendations and follow-up. This thoughtful and simple legislation will provide the statute clarification as recommended by the Department of Law to allow the specific language for the board to regulate the ongoing delegation of safe, supervised, non-invasive assistance for busy practices, which in turn continues to improve access for the residents and visitors of Alaska to much-needed eye care. Fortunately, this is non-controversial legislation with no cost to the state or cost to patients or their insurers. The Alaska Optometric Association and its membership fully support this legislation and are extremely grateful to the sponsor, Representative Ruffridge, and to this committee for this opportunity to promptly address this issue. Thank you for your kind consideration and time this afternoon, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Sumner.
through the chair, what would you see as being falling under routine services, I guess?
The assessment, through the chair, thank you for the question. Assessment of vision, taking a photograph for interpretation by the doctor, performing a scan on a piece of equipment that would be non-invasive that the doctor would interpret. Again, history taking, those performance of a peripheral vision test for the doctor to again interpret. Those would be the kind of routine tasks that a technician or assistant would typically perform.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Dr. Delser. Next, we have Elizabeth Stevens from Anchorage. Ms. Stevens, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay, please put your name on the record for us and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Prax, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and members of the House Health and Social Services Committee. My name is Elizabeth Stevens, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Optometric Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on behalf of over 100 members of our association who provide the majority of primary eye care statewide in both rural and urban communities alike. We would like to thank Representative Ruffridge for sponsoring House Bill 309, which grants the Board of Examiners in Optometry the authority to draft regulations regarding the delegation of routine optometric services. The Alaska Optometric Association strongly supports House Bill 309. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And next we have, Kathleen Rice, Ms. Rice from Kenai. Are you with us?
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine. Please put your name on the record for us and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, esteemed members of the House. My name is Kathleen Rice. I have been a licensed optometrist in Alaska for 17 years and am on the State Board of Examiners in Optometry. My professional background includes working as a technician in neuro-ophthalmology, doing cancer research for the CDC, practicing as an optometrist for the Department of Veterans Affairs at a commercial practice, at a medical referral center, and for the past 10 years a private practice owner. And I've utilized a technician for my entire career. I'm here to voice my strong support for House Bill 309. Optometrists in Alaska have for a long time had the authority to delegate tasks to opticians as patient expectations, standard of care, and the optometrist scope of practice evolve. The duties of an optometrist helper, previously the optician, now include more specific patient care tasks, which are picked up by a technician. House Bill 309 will allow the optometrist to delegate tasks to a technician. This would not change or expand any of our optometrist practice, but it will simply be an update to our statute to be in line with how we are all currently practicing. As a member of this community, I understand the importance of accessible and efficient eye care for all citizens. Optometrists for a long time have utilized staff members to assist in patient interactions. Many duties that optometrists rely on staff for include testing prior to seeing the doctor, scheduling patients, providing instructions, calling patients to confirm they have received the medication or have adapted to a new refraction, calling insurance companies and waiting on hold for sometimes over an hour for a simple authorization. Whether we call them opticians, technicians, billers, scribes, or receptionists, they have all skillfully performed various tasks over decades with precision and accuracy under the supervision of an optometrist. I thank you for providing this time for me to talk today, and I urge you all to support House Bill 309.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions for Ms. Rice? Okay, thank you, Ms. Rice. Next, we have Ethan Arndt from Anchorage. Mr. Arndt, are you with us? Dropped. Okay. Mr. Arndt? Looks like he dropped off. And Mr. Cross, you're just here for questions, according to my record here. So do we have any other questions for Representative Ruffridge? Representative Fields?
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm not extremely familiar with the division of labor between optometrists and ophthalmologists, and is there any cleanup of statutes necessary in a corresponding way for ophthalmologists? And I don't know what kind of board ophthalmologists have.
Through the chair, Representative Fields? Not that I'm aware of, to be honest with you. And that would be something I would have to look into to be completely clear on what the delegation authority of an ophthalmologist is. That's just not a section that I looked at in preparation for this bill, but certainly happy to talk with you about that offline.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Representative Ruffridge? All right. And with that, we will open public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room that wants to speak to House Bill 309? Seeing none, is there anyone else online that wants to speak to House Bill 309? And seeing and hearing none, public testimony is closed.
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Oh.
The chair. This is Dr. Cross.
Yeah.
Is this the appropriate time for me to speak? I just got back to my phone.
Oh, sure. Dr. Cross, please put yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, through the chair. Thank you so much for hearing my testimony. It's Dr. Bradley Cross. I'm an optometrist licensed in Alaska and the current board chair for the State Board of Examiners and Optometry in Alaska. I'm presenting this testimony in support of House Bill 309. Optometry is responsible for the majority of primary eye care in the state of Alaska. And we as optometrists have grown as a profession to accommodate the needs of Alaskans. Urban, rural, and remote eye care necessitates skilled practitioners who have a scope of practice that assures adequate care. We as a profession, as a state board, as a state association, and likely you as state legislators, understand and believe that statement. Optometry has shown itself to be economically beneficial to our population, safe, sustainable, and directly accountable to the state board, who in turn is accountable to this committee and the legislature. As you have seen, an omission in our state board statutes was discovered during our 2023 regulation project relating to telehealth. With the help of Representative Ruffridge and his staff, a simple yet clear solution has been created. This two-page bill will correct the oversight of not specifically spelling out that an optometrist can delegate ancillary testing to an assistant or a technician. This is much like our colleagues in dentistry, medicine, chiropractic, and veterinary medicine have done in the past with their specific statutes. It's very commonplace in optometry practices across the country to utilize technicians in the daily patient flow. This allows for more efficient use of resources within the prescribed practice and allows for access to care to not be bottlenecked. As our population age in the state increases and the number of providers actively practicing decreases, it allows optometrists to practice at an efficient level, and that is more important than ever before. With older populations, more diseases are present, which require more imaging, visual field testing, and more frequent visits than a younger population. The inclusion of this legislation will ensure that optometrists have the backing of our state statutes to provide high-level care for the patient base that is in the most need for those services. Why did this omission occur may be the question on your mind. It's a question I've been pondering myself in recent weeks. My conclusion to that is that in the distant past, there actually was a provision for delegation of tasks by an optometrist to an optician. As opticianry and optometry have matured and evolved over time, optometry has become much more medically oriented, especially in the past decade. This is a result of our positioning in more locations, and certainly in more remote areas than other eye care providers. As our optometric education and continuing education have transformed from optics only based into primary eye care and optical expertise simultaneously. This has led to the creation of a relatively new position with the optometric practices known as the optometric technician. I believe that the American Optometric Association started recognizing that terminology within the past 10 years. In order to catch up with this change in the dynamic of how optometry is now functioning, it is time to specifically delegate these tasks to optometric technicians in our statutes. On behalf of the Board of Examiners in Optometry, I thank you for taking up this bill, and after considering its merits, passing it on to become part of our statutes.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone have questions for Mr. Cross? Seeing none, is there anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 309? All right, so with that, public testimony is closed. And let's see, I guess we should set this bill aside. Can we set a amendment deadline for Monday at 5? And then we'll try and hear it again on next week and move this along. All right, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Brief D's. Back on record, we're gonna hear from David Paulson, who is the governor's appointee for the state medical board. Mr. Paulson, are you with us?
I'm here.
Very good. Would you please put yourself on the record and explain why you want to be on the state medical board?
Sure. I'm David Paulson. I'm a neurosurgeon who specializes in treatment of complex spine disorders in Anchorage. And I have served on the board since June of 2022. My focus as a board member has been and will continue to be protecting public safety of Alaskans through that's why I'm here today. Do you have questions for me specifically?
Do we have any questions for Dr. Paulson? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Prox. Through the chair to Dr. Paulson, thank you for your reapplication to the state medical board. I believe that most of the state medical board, their members are based in Anchorage, or if not, that there's not as much geographic diversity for rural perspectives. And I am curious if you could just comment on ways that the board has addressed those gaps in geographic representation.
Thank you. Dr. Paulson, did you catch the question?
I think I understand you're asking me how the board addresses having different, a diverse state, but everybody's pretty centralized to Anchorage area. I don't specifically have a solution for that, but that's something that we should bring up in a board meeting to try to bring some more attention to that.
Okay, thank you. Other questions for Dr. Representative Fields?
Thank you through the chair. Dr. Paulson, I saw that you were involved in some anti-mask policy advocacy during COVID. Are there other issues where you take a different view than, say, the prevailing scientific consensus on medical issues?
Dr. Paulson?
I'm not an anti-masker, if that's what you're asking me. I don't have opinions that are contrary to the medical community, and I think that there's a pretty clear understanding about how effective masks are. And I would stand by that.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Paulson, have you come across anything in the time that you've served on the board? Have you come across anything that is of particular interest that the legislature should think about or know about?
Well, I think that there's some
areas where in virtual care, telemedicine, and especially with artificial intelligence, those types of technologies that are coming into play and how we can integrate those and keep Alaska residents safe and protect public safety.
Okay, thank you.
I don't have, go ahead.
Nope, thank you. Any other questions for Dr. Paulson? Okay, thank you for applying, or for reapplying, I guess, and we'll take a brief at ease at this time to complete the application. No, we won't. We will. Riley. Oh, you're right. We will open public testimony on Dr. Paulson's application. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room that wants to testify on the appointment of Dr. David Paulson to the State Medical Board? Seeing none, is there anyone online that wanted to testify about the appointment of David Paulson to the State Medical Board? And hearing none, public testimony is now closed. And Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking through my packet at the background information on Dr. Paulson, and I have very bare-bones information. I wonder if you might be willing to send us a curriculum vitae or resume or just a little bit more information. I've got nothing on paper to go by here.
Dr. Paulson?
I'd be happy to. Can I have an email address to send that to? Do you need that now?
We don't need it immediately, but what is the email address here? If you send it to hhss@akleg.gov.
Can I ask you a question?
Representative Fields, before we get there, did you copy the email address?
I got hss@ak, and then I didn't write down the rest yet.
Oh, sorry. It would be akleg.gov.
Okay.
Right. And then Representative Field had another question, I think.
Thank you. Through the chair, hi, Dr. Paulson. I guess I do have a curriculum vitae for you in front of me. A lot of it is blacked out, and I just wanted to confirm that I'm assuming the blacked out portions are just your phone number, address, email address. Could you confirm that it's only contact information that's not blacked out and not sort of substantive work background?
To my knowledge, I haven't blacked anything out on them.
It's just the normal... Okay, so if you would please send us your resume, that would be appreciated. And again, thank you for applying to the State Medical Board.
Thank you.
And with that, the House Health and Social Services Committee has reviewed the qualification of Governor's appointee David Paulson to the State Medical Board and sends his nomination to the full legislature for consideration. Signing this report does not reflect any individual's recommendation or for of approval or disapproval. We will take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. On record, so the next item on our agenda is the second hearing of HB 298. Warning signs, alcohol warning signs on licensed premises, sponsored by Representative Gray. And here to assist Representative Gray is David Song. So would you please come up to the witness table? So would you like to just give us a brief update?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Prox. Just as a reminder for the committee, House Bill 298.
Before you get that far,
My name is Andrew Gray.
It is. Thank you.
And I represent House District 20, the UMed District in Anchorage. And just as a reminder for the committee, what this bill does, House Bill 298, can you give me the correct? Sorry. Adds a sentence to existing warning signage at all points of sale for alcohol. And the sentence reads, alcohol use can cause cancer, including breast and colon cancers. And as we explained in our first hearing, this is settled medical science, but unfortunately, most folks are not aware of it, and we would like more folks to be informed of the risks of the products they consume.
Okay, thank you. And we are taking public testimony today, and so we'll open public testimony on House Bill 298. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on House Bill 298? And do we have anyone online? We do have people online. Online, we have Joan Wilson, the Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, who is with us. Joan, did you want to testify on the bill, or just are you available for questions?
Just questions.
Just questions. Okay, thank you. We have Sean Viamo.
Hello, this is Dr. Sean Viamo.
I'm
a physician in Girdwood, Alaska, and I'm a past president of the Alaska Academy of Family Physicians and currently a board member of the Alaska Academy of Family Physicians. Thank you for giving me the chance to talk, speaker, and I'd like to give the full support of myself and the Alaska Academy of Family Physicians behind this bill. As Representative Gray has already stated, the overwhelming majority of the general public are unaware as to the carcinogenic effects of alcohol, specifically breast and colorectal cancer. And I'd also like to point out that Alaska is one of the states that defies the national statistics, where heart disease is the leading cause of death. In the state of Alaska, cancer is the leading cause of death. I think it is prime time for this to be notified to the public so they can make an aware decision. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Viamo? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, sir, I'm not going to attempt your last name, but you just spoke. Are there any other warning labels you think might appropriately go on other products for sale in Alaska?
For certain, this is Sean Vigneau, a family physician in Girdwood again. Thank you, the chair, and to Representative Sadler. Yes, I believe the tobacco warnings ought to be updated as well. There are many other products that we could continue on, but I think the two main players that the general public ought to be aware of at this time are, number one, alcohol, as this bill brings forward, and tobacco.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Bimiel. No, I understand that tobacco is currently required, and the bill proposes to add cancer to alcohol warnings, but are there any other products that you think might need warning labels other than alcohol and tobacco?
This is Dr. Bimiel again. Thank you, Chair, to Representative Sadler. At this time, I think we should tackle the task at hand. I think our energy ought to be devoted to alcohol specifically, and as further evidence is gathered about other products that are available to for human consumption, then that ought to be updated. So at this time, I would only say alcohol and tobacco.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up,
yes, sir.
Representative Sadler.
Notwithstanding alcohol and tobacco, are there other products you think would or not? Yes or no, please.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, yes.
And what would those be, sir?
At this time, there is gathering evidence about PFAS, about multiple man-made chemicals, about multiple other carcinogenic compounds that can be ingested. So besides tobacco, vape. There are multiple substances that you'll have to forgive me. I can't list them all off the top of my head.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I was not asking you to list them all, sir. I just wanted to get a couple of examples. Yes, there may be multiples. I was trying to get specifics, but I don't think I can get them from you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Viamo. Next, we have Tiffany Hall. Ms. Hall, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please put your name on the record for us and proceed with your testimony.
Thanks very much. My name is Tiffany Hall. I am the CEO of Recover Alaska, an organization that works to reduce excessive alcohol use and harms across the state. And I am also a person in long-term recovery from co-occurring alcohol use and mental health disorders. Thanks very much for the opportunity to testify, Chair Prax and members of the committee. I will start by saying myself personally, as well as Recover Alaska, are fully in support of this bill. Alcohol is the leading modifiable cause of death in Alaska. It kills more people than opioids and all other illicit substances combined, as well as contributes to a number of related harms with terribly high rates in our state. There is no question that alcohol causes cancer. There is no credible authority that disputes the consensus that even moderate alcohol consumption increases cancer risk. Unfortunately, that is largely unknown. Less than half of the population knows that alcohol causes cancer, and it is even not very well known among medical professionals. Knowledge is power, and public awareness is critical. Alcohol is different from other things. It is not an ordinary commodity. It is addictive. It is a class one carcinogen. It directly causes cancer. That said, people know more about some of the other risks that maybe you have been alluding to, Representative Sadler. People understand about bad fat and sugar. People don't know that alcohol causes cancer. I would love for a sizable investment from the state to do long-term public awareness campaigns about this issue. And this zero fiscal note bill is an incredibly efficient method to get information out to relevant audiences. I love the simple language of the bill and the efficiency of adding it to an existing sign, removing undue burden from retailers. And finally, I'll just say that cancer is just one of many harms related to alcohol. We have seen examples of this type of signage working to reduce consumption, and any reduction in consumption will lower rates of some of those other harms, and that's a great thing for our state. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Hall? Okay, thank you, Ms. Hall. Next, we have Nicole LaConte from Wisconsin. Nicole, are you online?
I'm here. My name is Noelle
LaConte. Noelle, sorry.
N-O-E-L-L-E if you need that. I am a medical oncologist, which is to say I'm a cancer doctor. I am from the University of Wisconsin. I am a public health researcher and a cancer prevention researcher, and I was the first author on the alcohol and cancer statement from the American Society of Clinical Oncology, which was published in 2018. That's the professional society for cancer doctors across the United States and now globally as well. Endorsing that, as was already stated, alcohol is a well-established class one carcinogen by the World Health Organization. Just to frame that up, other class one carcinogens would be things like smoking, UV light, hepatitis B, human papillomavirus. So these are not controversial labels. And as was already stated, too, the awareness of alcohol as a carcinogen is quite low and across various different surveys from organizations, including the National Cancer Institute and the American Society of Clinical Oncology. It hovers at around 30% awareness by the general public as well as medical professionals of alcohol as a carcinogen. And in contrast, UV light is somewhere around 60% and tobacco is around 80%. There's even some people that think alcohol prevents cancer, which is clearly erroneous. So we think that laws like this that will increase awareness will increase people's ability to make educated choices around their alcohol consumption. I did want to mention that alcohol causes seven types of cancer, Colorectal and breast have been mentioned, but also has is shown to contribute to liver cancer, larynx cancer, oral cavity and pharynx, and a type of esophageal cancer called squamous cell. So seven total cancers contributes to roughly approximately 5% of cancers globally. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions for Ms. LeConte? Very good, thank you. Next, we have Joyce Song from North Carolina. Ms. Song, are you with us?
Hi. So my name is Joyce Song, and I'm a PA student at Duke University. I've also worked in multiple hospitals and medical practices for several years. I'm supporting House Bill 298 because I know there is a real and definitive connection between alcohol use and cancer. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And that is all I have on my list. Is there anyone else in the room that wanted to testify on House Bill number 187?
298.
Well, okay. House Bill 298. And is there anyone else online that wanted to testify on House Bill 298, alcohol warning signs on licensed premises? Seeing none?
Oh. My staff would like to make one disclosure.
Yes, David Song, staff to Representative Gray. Just wanted to say that Joy Song is my sister.
Oh. Okay. All right, thank you. So public testimony on House Bill 298 is now closed. I believe we have a question from Representative Sumner.
Through the chair to the bill sponsor, I was just going to ask if you could please provide the committee with the animal studies that are the basis for the belief that ethanol causes cancer. And I don't dispute that those exist. I just, you know, looking briefly, I see a lot of ones that say difference not significant between the treated group and the control group. I do see studies showing that acetaldehyde.
Acetaldehyde.
Yeah, inhalation does cause cancer, but I was just curious if you could please provide those to the committee. Thank you.
Through the chair to Representative Sumner, we will provide you with whatever studies you need.
Thank you. I thought we had amendments.
At ease.
At ease. Yeah, we have amendments. At ease. Back on record, we have two amendments to Senate Substitute for House Bill 298. Representative Meehan.
I move Amendment 1.
And I object.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Amendment number 1, this is adding 5 words to the warning label on the bill. Currently, the warning label, as proposed by HB 298, states, warning, alcohol use during pregnancy can cause birth defects, period. Alcohol use can cause cancer, including breast and colon cancers, period. I understand that a lot of the discussion on this bill and the presentation revolves, obviously, on the cancer portion, but I am also aware of efforts in this legislature to educate on FASD, not only in terms of education, but proposing different policies to help prevent fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I distributed an amendment to the committee that I am hopeful will be on basis. It's currently not on basis. And so for the public record, this is from the Alaska Center for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders, that they express their general support for the bill. And they also appreciate language that would add specifying fetal alcohol spectrum disorder as an example of a birth defect. I know that this adds more words to the warning sign. So in terms of the goal of the bill to have a simple warning sign, it might make the text a little smaller. And also, not everybody might know what fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is. However, I do think that there was some compelling testimony that spoke to seeing words such as breast cancer and colon cancer. And if you may have experienced that in your family, psychologically, you might have a response where it causes you to pause your habit and action in response to seeing that sign. Given that line of justification, I think that FASD is an important issue for our state to help address, and that adding this language in the warning label would be a good way to help educate on that as an example of a birth defect. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Prox. Thank you, Representative Mina, for bringing this amendment forward. And while I certainly think that bringing awareness to this issue is a very valid and noble effort, I actually think I share some of the concerns you brought up in your introduction, especially just adding additional words to the sign as it is now. Certainly FASD would, under some broad sense, fall under a birth defect. Birth defect seems a little more general and something that people may have a clear understanding is just something that is somewhat a negative consequence. I do worry a little bit about cluttering up the new sign just in general. Having said that, I was at a local restaurant here a couple of days ago and noticed this old sign, and the old sign certainly is very easy to ignore. So I think an update is certainly worth it. And the reason the old sign is easy to ignore is because of the bulk of words, was my point. So I'm not certain, really, honestly, on the amendment. I think it's a good and reasonable effort, but I'll have to think about that for a second.
Representative Fields.
Thank you. Through the chair, as I recall, the underlying bill significantly reduces the number of words, and Representative Mina, I was curious if there would still be a net word reduction with the reduction in the previous number of words and then adding back in five words, what if that would leave us with a reduced number of words total, or where it'd leave us vis-a-vis Representative Ruffridge's comments.
Mr. Chair, if I may respond.
Representative Mina.
Just for a second. I will take a second to respond back to you, Rep. Fields. Thank you for that question. I'll do the math as someone else asks a question.
Very good. Representative McCormick.
Thank you. Through the chair, I would just like to hear input from the bill sponsor on this amendment.
Thank you, Chair Prox. Through the chair to Representative McCormick. My count is that this amendment would make the word count exactly the same as the previous sign. So it would just sort of take us back to where we were. I am grateful to bringing attention to fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I would say that I'm neutral about adding the words. I did want to reduce the number. I did want to make the sign a little simpler. And I share the feeling with Representative Ruffridge that fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is a birth defect. Birth defect is there. And so I think that the goal to acknowledge that drinking while pregnant could harm the fetus is being accomplished with the existing words. So, but I remain neutral. Thank you.
Any other comments? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Mr. I guess I'd weigh in on the side of brevity being more effective. And I think that the term birth defects does encompass FAS. I don't think there's an additional efficacy obtained by adding one or a list of other potential birth defects. So I think that just something saying the alcohol, does it say can or may? Whatever. Using birth defects as opposed to the specificity of FAS probably makes it more effective. So I'm inclined to respectfully decline to support the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Fields.
Could I ask through the chair if Joan Wilson is online?
Ms. Wilson, Jen Wilson, are you online?
I think you're asking for Joan Wilson. But...
I was asking for Joan Wilson. I'm sorry. Ms. Wilson.
Hi, Ms. Wilson. I was hoping you could confirm that with or without this language, if this bill were to pass, you could include a picture on a sign if your agency felt that made sense. Because when Representative Gray was presenting the bill, it struck me that actually a simple picture kind of conveyed a lot more than a blizzard of words. But just wanted to make sure that you feel like you have that flexibility.
I believe we have that flexibility. And is it worth mentioning here, a representative, that I think we could also add a QR code to provide a link to a site that explains further complications such as FASD?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate this bill getting me thinking about signs, because normally when I look at signs, I just think, who would read them? There are too many signs and they have too many words. So I do see an opportunity to communicate more clearly, and I do kind of think less is more, particularly if the department can use pictures that would be immediately recognizable for people entering an establishment where they don't want to stop and read sign.
Okay, Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think I would also oppose the amendment just because I think that keeping it as concise as possible is especially important for the risk of alcohol consumption during pregnancy, which I think has probably the highest societal cost over the length of the effect. So I think we really need to keep that concise, but I might support adding a picture possibly. Thanks.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I appreciate the discussion from the committee on this amendment. I'll first respond to Rep. Fields' question. I just did the math, and I will corroborate with Representative Gray. It is the same number of words. But understanding that from the discussion, the goal of the bill is that we want to have a more brief sign, I am willing to withdraw the amendment. One other note that I want to add, just from the division, the QR code idea is very interesting and I think would be a great way to get to the goal of educating on birth defects without cluttering up the sign too much. Thank you.
You're going to have to draw that amendment.
At ease.
At ease. From the committee, Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I withdraw amendment number one and appreciate the discussion. Thank you.
All right. Amendment number one is withdrawn. Amendment number two, Representative Fields.
I move amendment two.
I won't object.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler, object. Representative Fields.
Thank you. And I really appreciate the bill sponsor bringing forward this idea, because I think, especially looking at the visuals that he presented, we could do a way better job presenting information. Right now it's cluttered. And I also think about small business owners who have all this paper on their small businesses. They've got a lot to deal with. So I think there's an opportunity to communicate more clearly for the benefit of public health and to make the posting of these signs less annoying for small business owners and hopefully have something that's actually legible for people who are entering an establishment. So with that in mind, and with the recognition that we probably have to be very concise in what we communicate or else no one will read it, my amendment does something very simple. It consolidates the number of signs that these small businesses have to post from 3 to 2. When you read this amendment, you're going to see a lot of words. It's actually pretty simple. Right now, there's a sign outside the establishment that is the warning about an unaccompanied person under 21 years of age may be in violation of the law. That's existing law. That sign does have to be outside. There's another sign that's inside. And
So this amendment does not change that organization. If there's a sign outside and there's a sign inside, it reduces the amount of signage inside and leaves intact Representative Gray's suggestion to include cancer. And I think the goal here is hopefully by consolidating the amount of information on the sign inside, it's more comprehensible and more people will look at it. And I guess I would just note, if this amendment is adopted, we are leaving it to the discretion of the department how to design that sign, whether to include pictures, QR codes. I don't really want to design that in committee. I'm confident the department will do a good job. And the only other thing I'd mention is I appreciate Ms. Wilson and her staff taking the time to talk about this. And I believe it's my understanding that they think they could consolidate the amount of information down to one sign inside to be more legible and more clearly communicate public health issues to patrons of these establishments. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yeah.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Fields, in looking at the your amendment, I see that the changes, it adds an awful lot. It's more specificity, statutory definitions or citations for the different package store license, pub license, brewery license. But the existing current law does not have those specifics. It just says pub license, brewery license. I'd like to ask, what's the purpose for those individual citations?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think the way the amendment is drafted, you're actually looking at existing statutory language. I'm not changing that. All I'm changing is 3-2. And I would defer to Ms. Wilson to confirm that that's what we're doing here.
Mr. Chair, that's accurate. All those facilities, those entities listed in A1 through, 29, have the obligation to display those two signs under this amendment versus three.
Follow?
Representative Sadler.
Yeah, I guess through the chair to Ms. Wilson, I'm actually looking at ASO 421065, A1 through 14, and I'm not seeing the additional citation. For example, beverage dispensary license. The current statute just says beverage dispensary license. The statute says beverage dispensers license under ASO 409-200. And that's just an interesting drafting thing. I wonder what the reason for that is.
You probably have to ask Senator Michiki in the legislative.
He's not here.
These licenses, which you can find under these statutes. So if you are a brewery manufacturer license as described under ASO 409-020, and you have an endorsement, you are one of the people that have to display this. But if the question is, are the statutory references for all of these entities going to be on any sign, I don't believe Section A requires that.
No, actually, through the chair, my question is, the actual amendment proposes to include I guess someone can clear it up for me, because I'm looking at the statute right now and I don't see the citation. It says beverage dispensary license. It does not say beverage dispensary license under ASO 409-200.
Mr. Chairman, is Ledge legal online? And if they aren't, maybe we could get them to explain. I have a feeling this has to do with Title IX rewrite, because again, my amendment is not changing that underlying statute.
Okay.
No, 2022.
Eddies. On record, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the answer we received in the break. The record is that I've been looking at the statute book dated 2022, and apparently because the rewrite of Title IV happened since 2022, I would need to look at session laws instead. So I appreciate that clarification. I would ask a question to the chair, Mr. Representative Fields. Isn't this a lot of language to put on a sign? Page 2, line 28 through 20. Yeah, it's just a lot of words. What's your thought about, is that going to be effective to have that long of a citation on a sign?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, and I hope Ms. Wilson will correct me if I'm wrong. Again, I'm not changing the language around minors entering an alcohol-serving establishment. We're consolidating the other information about health risks inside. Thank you.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes, so the way I understand Representative Fields' amendment is basically he's asking the Department of Commerce, AMCO, to take two 11 by 17 13 signs and put them together in one sign, as amended, of course, by Representative Gray's bill. Looking at the signs now, they're in my hand, there's a lot of white space. If this is the will of the legislature to reduce, I guess, the burden on businesses and perhaps clutter, I would commit to making it as clear and readable as possible for folks.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. It was a long night and early morning this morning, and so I do see that the third sign under current law does include this language, so it's not an extension of the language. It does not make it more cluttered, more worried than it currently is, so I stand corrected. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Prox. Through the chair to Representative Fields, maker of the amendment. Is the intention of the amendment to add back in the language regarding smoking cigarettes?
Through the chair, I actually didn't have a position on that. That wasn't the goal. The goal was actually just consolidation in the interest of clear communication and reduction of clutter. I think the cigarettes thing is a separate issue.
Just a follow-up, if I may.
Representative Ruppich.
Okay, thank you, Chair Prox. I just wanted clarification on page 2 of the amendment, line 23. Seems to, I think that's how I read it, is to reintroduce what I think in Representative Gray's bill initially was repealing the or smoking cigarettes language to be a more concise word on the sign.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Ruffridge. Good point. My staff had flagged that for me, and I guess I want to turn to Representative Gray. Was it your intention to eliminate the cigarettes language? I think this is something that our staffs might have worked on and that I didn't focus on.
Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Fields, our feeling was that in 2024, since smoking is no longer allowed indoors, and this is warning folks to not engage in activities from the sign that they're reading, that it was a little bit obsolete language, and this was a way of eliminating some extra words from the sign. We certainly don't have a constitutional opposition to warning people about the dangers of smoking, but we felt that in 2024, with no smoking allowed indoors, that we could perhaps do away with those words.
You, Representative Ruffridge.
Just another follow-up, I guess, is I would be inclined to support Amendment 2, but again, sticking with the intent of keeping the sign as uncluttered as possible, would hope to maybe eliminate line 23 through 26.
Mr. Chairman, I would happily accept a conceptual amendment to do that.
Representative Sumner.
I move a conceptual amendment to amendment number 2 to strike lines 23 through 26.
Do I hear an objection? Okay, with that, we have adopted conceptual amendment 1 to amendment number 2, which would delete
lines 23 through 26.
All right, back to the amendment 2. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to Rep. Fields, could you walk me through the difference between the number 2 sign and the number 3 sign in statute? What's the differences, and why did you pick the whatever sign to delete from statute?
Thank you, through the chair, to Rep. Mina, basically based on consultation with Joan Wilson, and I would defer to her to explain the signs inside and outside and, you know, the most logical way to put some information outside versus inside. Thank you.
Ms. Wilson?
Through the chair, Representative, one of the main signs, the first sign, is to warn unaccompanied minors that you are about to enter onto licensed premises. Just be cautious. There's lots of ways minors can be on premises. But the big thing is we don't want, you know, 19-year-olds going into places, bars, without knowledge, because that creates some liability for them. The second sign is actually a warning that should they get in, or should, for example, a bar have a restaurant endorsement, kids can be present for purposes of dining, no adult better be furnishing that child alcohol. And it's that's the warning to them that's inside the premises, along with the warning on the risk effects of alcohol consumption.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair, and thank you for that clarification. And so with this language, it includes the information that you, if you're a minor, you cannot be unaccompanied in the facility, but it does include, doesn't include the information that you can't sell or give alcohol to a minor. Is that correct?
So I need to look a little closer at the amendment, but the warning sign on the outside of the licensed premise is the one that should tell the minor they need to be careful coming in, and the one inside the premise should be talking about furnishing.
Thank you for the clarification. I will say that when I was a minor, that sign is very scary, and I didn't go inside the liquor store. So thank you.
Very good.
It worked.
It worked, yes. Representative Sumner.
Mr. Chair, and somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that Representative Fields' amendment is simply combining the language of minors shall not enter the premises with the language of nobody shall furnish somebody under 21 with alcohol.
I believe that's right, Mr. Chairman.
Well, let me review that.
And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sumner.
And I say that because it's deleting the third sign and inserting after warning on line 10 of the second sign, all that language, and then the other language that was on the second sign is still remaining there. So that would be my understanding anyway.
Representative Ruffridge.
I think to Representative Mina, thank you through the chair. In other words, the scary sign outside will be a lot scarier with a lot more words and a lot more dollars.
All right. Any more thoughts on Representative Mina?
Thank you, Rep. Parks. Through the chair, I will say that I am in support of the amendment, and I appreciate Rep. Rhodes for bringing this forward and continuing to centralize the language. One part that I do want to comment on is the removal of the smoking cigarettes language. I do think it is appropriate in the context of the goal of the bill to reduce the words, to remove the word smoking cigarettes. However, I am concerned that tobacco usage is on the rise. However, it's not in terms of smoking cigarettes. It's in vaping and e-cigarettes and other forms of tobacco, and that shall still be of concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments on Amendment 2? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick point of order. I did hear propose the conceptual amendment one. I'm not quite sure if I heard the disposition of that motion.
I believe we adopted that without objection.
Okay, correct.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Representative Sadler, no. Do you maintain your objection?
No, I withdraw my objection.
You withdraw. Does anyone else object to amendment number 2? To Senate substitute for House Bill 298. No. Yes. House Bill 298. All right. So Amendment 2, as amended by Conceptual Amendment Number 1, also known as 33 LS 1074. /S-2 is adopted. We are now. Do we have any more amendments? Brief at ease. Representative Ruffridge, do you have a motion for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill 298, also known as 33-LS1074, be moved from committee as amended with attached individual recommendations and fiscal notes, and authorize legislative legal to make any changes conforming or deletions to the suggested language, including technical or bill title changes, in order to accomplish the intent of the bill.
Hearing no objections, House Bill 298 is moved from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. Next up, we have House Concurrent Resolution 15, Mental Health Month, Tardive Disc Week, by the Health and Social Services Committee. And my staff, committee staff, Ref. Riley Nye, will give us an introduction, present the resolution, and we have invited testimony. Mr. Nye.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for hearing HCR 15 today. For the record, Riley Nye, staff to Representative Prox. In Alaska, as across the nation, mental illness and its negative impacts stretch far and wide, touching families in every community and across all walks of life. HCR 15 shines a light on the importance of mental health awareness and challenges of tardive dyskinesia. It is estimated that over 108,000 adults in the state have mental health conditions such as major depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and other debilitating behavioral health conditions. The onset of mental health disorders peaks during adolescence and early adulthood, marking a critical period for intervention and support. Yet many Alaskans do not receive the treatment they need due to a variety of barriers, including costs and access to professionals. Complicating the landscape is the prevalence of tardive dyskinesia, TD, a movement disorder induced by long-term use of antipsychotic medications. TD affects 10 to 30% of individuals taking these medications and can significantly impact their quality of life. HCR 15 will designate May 2024 as Mental Health Awareness Month and May 5th through 11th as Tardive Dyskinesia Awareness Week. By doing this, we support those battling mental health conditions, advocate for comprehensive care, and challenge the stigma that discourages seeking help. Let us make mental health a priority in Alaska, ensuring that our policies, resources, and communities are aligned in support of those who face these challenges every day. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nye. Next, we will hear public testimony on HCR 15, Mental Health Month, Tardive Disc Awareness Week. Public testimony is open. Is there anyone in the room that wants to testify on HCR 15? And online, I have Ann Ringstad, the Executive Director of NAMI Alaska. Ms. Ringstad, are you with us? Ms. Ringstad, are you online?
Hello?
There we go. We can hear you. Please put your name on the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm online. Do you hear me?
We can hear you, Ms. Ringstad. Please put yourself online, on record, and proceed with your testimony.
Hello? Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Proceed with your testimony if you would like.
Okay. Thank you so much. My name is Ann Ringstad, Executive Director of NAMI Alaska. We are the state organization of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, created in 1986 in Alaska, and we serve the entire state with in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and the North Slope with our affiliates. Our mission is to eliminate the stigma of mental illness by providing advocacy, education, support, and public awareness so that all individuals and families affected by mental illness can build better lives. I would like to compliment Mr. Nye for his excellent overview of this resolution. He's hit all the salient points. We know that Alaskans are struggling to get the help that they need, and more than half of the people with mental health conditions in the United States did not receive any treatment last year. Of the 29,000 adults in Alaska who did not receive mental health care, over 42% did not because of cost. And 377,470 Alaskan residents live in a community that does not have enough mental health professionals. So anyone is susceptible to experiencing mental health difficulties, just as we're susceptible to physical health issues and emergencies. We've provided this resolution, the information in the resolution to talk about mental health, but also on tardive dyskinesia. This is a great opportunity to bring this forward. It's suggested that between 10 and 30% of people who take medications to treat their mental health disorders will develop a movement disorder called tardive dyskinesia, also known as TD. One in every four patients receiving long-term treatment with an antipsychotic medication may experience TD. And in many cases, up to 60% of them don't even know that they have it. So this just brings about more awareness. We would like to thank the House Health Committee for sponsoring this important resolution. It will increase awareness about mental illness, and it encourages all of us to recognize the challenges of those affected by mental health issues, helping to overcome and end the stigma of mental illness. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important resolution.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone have questions for Ms. Ringstad? Ms. Ringstad, I am wondering, you said, I think, 10 to 30% of people that are on antipsychotic drugs develop this tardive dyskinesia?
Yes, it seems like an alarming number, but the facts are pretty clear. It involves shaking, twitches, all sorts of things that may look like something else, but it's really an effect of the antipsychotic drugs that they're on. And if they recognize that something is just not right, they need to go to a provider to get it figured out.
Okay, thank you. And the implication would be that prescribing that medication was not the correct thing to do. Are there alternatives?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not a physician or a medical or a behavioral health care provider, but I would again say going to a provider to discuss what the alternatives would absolutely be the right thing to do.
Okay, thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ms. Ringstad, good to hear your voice. And I want to ask a question that might sound facetious, but it's sincere. That's a rather high incidence of severe mental disorders in Alaska, about 15%. And again, sincerely, is that because you're crazy to want to come to Alaska, or does Alaska make you such when you get here? I guess the better question below that is: is there any understanding of what the cause for this high rate of serious mental illness in Alaskans is?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that's a great question. Who knows why mental illnesses start? There's all sorts of different reasons for it. I know that about 50% of all mental illness manifests themselves by the time a person is 14 years old, and sometimes it's not diagnosed until they're in their 20s, 30s, or 40s. So the more we understand about mental illness, the more that we can deal with it and get the help that we need and focus on where we need behavioral health supports in the state to overcome this.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. A follow-up through the chair, Ms. Ringstad. And there, as we know, there's a number of different celebratory or observance weeks and months. What do you think the effects will be of designating May as this year as Mental Health Awareness Month? How is that likely to positively impact treatment or prevention or detection of mental health disorders?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that's another good question. This gives an opportunity for legislators to stand up and talk about mental health on the floor and with their constituents and really bring it to light. We've had this resolution or something similar to this for the last couple of years, and it helps the legislators, it formates the talking points, it helps them to stand up and talk about their own experiences and really championing this effort because we're all in this together. So bringing this to light, it's a national movement. A couple of years ago, we were the only state that did not do a resolution in support of Mental Health Month. And we would like to continue the tradition now of being all of the 50 states putting this resolution forward to bring awareness to our constituents, to our residents, to everyone about mental health.
Thank you.
We're good. Thank you, Representative Sadler. Are there any other questions for Ms. Ringstad? All right. Thank you, Ms. Ringstad. And do we have anyone else online that wants to testify about HCR 15? And do we have anyone in the room? That brings public testimony to a close. And brief at ease. Representative Ruffridge, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Chair Prox. I would move House Concurrent Resolution Number 15 from Committee, also known as 33-LS1494/A, and with the individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Do we have any objections? Seeing none. Seeing no objections, HCR 15 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Record, we have one more bit of business. We have to adopt the fiscal note that goes with HCR 9. Which was a mental health resolution related to mental health parity. So, Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move to adopt and attach the House Concurrent Resolution 9 fiscal note, LEG-SESSOMB component number 0, to HCR 9 version 33-LS1299/A. That was previously reported from committee on 3/19/24.
And do we have any objections? Seeing none. Seeing no objections, the fiscal note to HCR 9 is adopted and attached. And is there any other business before the committee or any comments or questions from committee members? With that, the House Health and Social Services Committee is adjourned at 4:48.